Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this week we're looking at South Carolina's senior senator and the moment conservatives fell in love with and or fell back in love with Senator Lindsey Graham following the Supreme Court confirmation hearing last week involving nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh and his sexual assault accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who are at the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of watching that Office spinoff called Jack Ryan. Jim's backstory is really crazy. Or wondering when I'm going to spoil myself with my one pumpkin spice latte of the year. So exclusive. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson's office has said it sued the State Election Commission to extend voter registration by more than a week after Hurricane Florence caused disruptions across the state. Right now, deadlines to vote in the November 6th election vary. In-person registration ends October 5th, online registration ends October 7th, and mail-in registration must be postmarked by October 9th. Now, Wilson's office has sued to extend the deadline to October 17th for in-person and mail registration. This extension would cover all 46 counties in the state. Number two, the state newspaper reports that recent filings by state regulators say SCE&G should have abandoned construction of the VC Summer nuclear plant more than 2 years before the project ultimately collapsed. They used the finding to argue customers should not be expected to pay for any of the project's costs after 2015, which would slash rates by 20% from the amount the company was charging before the legislature reduced rates temporarily by 15%. Number three, the Post and Courier reports that BMW saw sharp declines in exports of vehicles it builds in Greer, as tariffs and a model changeover are taking a toll on overseas sales, prompting the automaker to cut its expected profit margin to the lowest level since the Great Recession. Vehicle exports from the Port of Charleston, which are almost exclusively BMWs made in Greer, plunged 35% in August compared to a year ago, according to the State Ports Authority. China is the Port of Charleston's biggest customer, accounting for goods valued at $6.3 billion shipped in 2017, of which $2.4 billion was BMWs. And number four, it's fall, remember, which means flu season is almost upon us. We here at The Lead encourage you to wash your hands, cover your cough, and get a flu shot, especially since the United States saw a record flu season last year with an estimated 80,000 deaths. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The previous high was 56,000 deaths more than three decades ago. Last year's vaccine was about 40% effective, but getting the flu shot helps with herd immunity and provides another layer of protection for vulnerable populations such as children and older adults. We are getting our flu shots this week. Find all that on Twitter and Instagram at @SCLeadPod. And just like that, we buried the lead. Dang it! Last week's hearing surrounding the sexual assault allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh was a watershed moment in U.S. politics, and one of South Carolina's own was at the center of the storm, Senator Lindsey Graham. The Seneca Republican was in rare form. Graham was fired up and ready to blow. Following Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's testimony, he lambasted Democrats for their politicizing of the confirmation process, saying it was, quote, the most despicable thing he's seen in his time in Washington. The tongue-lashing garnered national attention and rekindled a conservative love fest back home for Graham in a way we haven't seen in some time. Joining us to discuss this current state of play is Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier, who, among other things, keeps a close eye on the state's congressional delegation. Hey, Jamie, welcome back.
Thanks, Gavin.
Jamie, your headline for the story that ran Friday in the Post and Courier was, SC conservatives say Lindsey Graham rebuilt reputation in Kavanaugh hearing. You talked to a lot of people for that story. Mm-hmm. What did you hear and what's going on right now?
It is a total love fest, the likes of which we have really never seen between the conservative base in South Carolina and Senator Graham. These are folks who have been extremely critical of him for years, certainly most prominently whenever the topic of immigration comes up. Senator Graham's always been somewhat of a moderate on immigration, always looking for compromise there. That's what led conservatives to give him the nickname Lindsey Grahamnesty. And there's just been widespread skepticism about him for years among the GOP base, partly because, and this is relevant here, because he voted for Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, two of President Obama's Supreme Court nominees. And when he unleashed this verbal storm during the hearing on Thursday, you could see it immediately on social media. You could see it from talking to folks. They were just so excited to have someone really aggressively telling their point of view after what had been, you know, I think it was a real turning point in that hearing. Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony was extremely emotional. It was very compelling. It was riveting. And I think that a lot of Democrats watching it felt like this nomination was in tatters. There was just no way it was going to move forward. The nominee, Brett Kavanaugh's response was also very forceful and very angry. And that brought a little bit of momentum back towards his side. But when Senator Graham interrupted the prosecutor they had hired, Rachel Mitchell, and went off on this, it really did seem to change the dynamic and brought it back to basically what it's been for the last couple of weeks, which is a really partisan, polarized divide. You know, we hear folks talk about how could this risk alienating Republican women or independent women? And maybe it will, but I can certainly say that I talked to quite a few Republican women last week. Meg Kinnard from the AP, who we have on here often, she talked exclusively to women. You know, it was falling much more along party lines than it was along gender lines. Mm-hmm. Republican women, a lot of them in South Carolina, were extremely supportive of Senator Graham on this. They said, we don't want to be pigeonholed into supporting one side or the other just based on our gender. Mm-hmm. We believe that Brett Kavanaugh is a good nominee, and we have not been convinced that these allegations are necessarily true. So it was a fascinating moment, and one that I think, as everyone said, both people who do not like Senator Graham and people who do, that it was a moment that I don't think will soon be forgotten in his career.
Yeah, we heard from some of his big critics, and I know we'll get to that in a minute, but I did like that one quote you had from Newt Gingrich in your article. It said, I think that moment justified Lindsey Graham's entire career.
Yeah.
Was that also kind of maybe like an unofficial launch for his reelection campaign? I mean, everyone keeps talking about him being like the next attorney general, but with the possibility of him becoming Senate Judiciary Chairman, that has a lot more staying power than being Trump's AG.
I mean, that's the thing. We only know for certain that Trump has two more years in office. You know, obviously, Republicans hope that he gets reelected in 2020, but if you win your Senate race in 2020, you've got six more years in office. I don't think Senator Graham has any intention of leaving the public eye anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, you know, he may view the Senate seat as a safer long-term option. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, this has really put a target on his back from Democrats. And we heard a lot of folks, you know, saying last week that this is going to South Carolina Democrats saying last week that this is going to make him their big prize. You know, it's unusual to see folks when you have a month away from one election immediately turn their attention to the next one in 2020 because folks were so angry and wanted to focus on Senator Graham. We had the South Carolina Democratic Party putting out fundraising appeals about Senator Graham's reelection, which isn't for 2 years. And we heard, you know, I talked to Jamie Harrison, the former South Carolina Democratic Party chairman, now at the DNC, who's saying that he may look at challenging Senator Graham. Saw some tweets from other folks who were sort of vaguely hinting that they may run too. So, you know, he has vigorously denied that he would be interested in attorney general or in any other position in the cabinet. He's already rejected, we know from the Bob Woodward book, the ambassadorship to Pakistan. And I think he quite enjoys the position he's in right now. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look back and he did defeat six people in his 2014 primary. Then he also went on to go and trounce State Senator Brad Hutto from Orangeburg very handily. So it is, I guess maybe you do need a 2-year head start if you really want to start getting serious about trying to take down Lindsey Graham, which, you know, in and of itself, if you have this kind of momentum going into 2020, again, 2 years away, and, you know, he raised like some $12 million or something like that for that race, too. I mean, he has the fundraising, and now it sounds like he's gained some of this momentum among the conservatives that were fighting against him because he wasn't, quote, conservative enough. And Right. Now that seems to be shifting.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about it being sort of the kickstart to his 2020 reelection campaign, you know, there are certainly a lot of critics and cynics who said that this was just a political ploy for that purpose to avoid, you know, having a primary challenger. But, you know, I think Emma Domain and the McClatchy Washington Bureau had a great tweet thread last week about, you know, how it is very personal for Graham as well. And we mentioned Kagan and Sotomayor, and he brought that up a lot in his speech. And it was really to say, you know, I sacrificed a lot back home in South Carolina to support your guys' nominees. Mm-hmm. That was something that really riled people up here for a long time. And now that we're in this position, you know, you guys are not returning the favor at all. You're not willing to take a hit among your base for this guy. And certainly they would say that this is very different because he's had these allegations against him. But, you know, let's be real. Most of them had already said they were voting against him before these allegations came out. So I think it has really angered him on a personal level beyond the political dimensions. And if there's one thing we know about Senator Graham, it is that for the most part, he is going to say what he thinks and let the political chips fall where they may. Mm-hmm. I think he feels pretty confident that at the end of the day, he'll still have enough votes in South Carolina to win no matter what he says. He is calculating, certainly, like any other politician. He is always aware of the fact that, you know, he is at the whims of the voters at the end of the day. But he's also someone who is not going to be afraid of taking a stand at the risk of electoral defeat if he really believes it. He is someone who speaks his mind an awful lot, pretty much any microphone he can find. Yeah. And we saw him do that again.
I want to talk about the Trump factor and all this because, you know, obviously Lindsey Graham and President Trump are very close when it comes to dealing with congressional issues. He's kind of almost like the president's liaison, it seems like. And, you know, we heard him say when Jeff Flake, Senator Jeff Flake, Republican from Arizona, who kind of brokered this whole one-week investigation for the FBI to look into these allegations further, do more of a background check, you know, Lindsey Graham was asking, you know, they were asking him questions in the scrum, and he said, someone needs to explain this to Trump, and I guess that's going to be me.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of like a de facto conduit there for Trump in some ways when it comes to this matter specifically, among other matters. But this one, he's kind of running point, it looks like.
Yeah. And again, you know, in some ways, going back to that discussion we had about a potential cabinet position, in some ways, he almost already has a position in the Trump administration, which is liaison to the Senate.
Yeah.
Who would have thought a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that of all people in the U.S. Capitol, Senator Graham would have arguably the closest relationship with the president at this point of any member of Congress. He has worked concertedly to develop that. He has become a real bulldog for the administration, you know, on cable news, in the Senate, on the Senate floor. That also, while it is surprising, you could have seen some elements again of his character that would suggest that this would be something he might do. He is someone who is always looking at what is the way I can get the most influence in this situation, you know, and he is willing to sacrifice certain things to get that. And, you know, he clearly thought 2 years ago and throughout the campaign and throughout the early months of the administration that this president was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, he said that pretty much in those words. But he was willing to subvert those concerns and really embrace him. We saw a lot of the details about sort of the formation of their relationship in the Bob Woodward book, which it seems quite clear Senator Graham was a, you know, major source for. Mm-hmm. And I think it's reciprocal, too. I mean, the president wanted Senator Graham as a friend, you know, when they first met, as the book recounts. You know, he said, we got to be friends, you know, put his arm around him. I think we're going to get along. And so that relationship has really developed to a stage that makes it to the part where they are pretty much symbiotic at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they're golfing buddies. They talk regularly. You know, I was reading stuff about, you know, everyone keeps talking about when was this transition happening with Graham coming around to Trump. And it's, you know, you hear him say, like, they have a lot of things in common, things that, you know, strengthening the military, And, you know.
And he's really tried to shape the administration's foreign policy into a much more hawkish one, which is really quite different from what Trump was talking about on the campaign trail. And it's been fascinating to see him succeed on that front.
And it's funny, you know, it's almost like we're going to, you know, 2 years from now, come campaign season, we'll obviously probably see Donald Trump. If everything maintains the way it is right now, we'll see Donald Trump down here campaigning for Senator Graham. And Donald Trump was actually down here earlier, you might remember, when he was in town for Governor McMaster's runoff.
Right.
And we were all up there in West Columbia, and we're in this packed gymnasium, and Trump's in there. It's the beginning of his hour-long speech, and he's introducing, you know, members of the congressional delegation. And he gets to Lindsey, and I can play this clip right here. And this is a clip of Donald Trump introducing Lindsey Graham to, you know, an auditorium full of these really conservative Republicans who were there really to see Trump. You know, obviously it was McMaster event, but they were there to see Trump. So let's listen to that clip really quick.
We have a man who has become a friend of mine. It's shocking, isn't it? It's shocking. We went at it. And he said, I'll defeat him in South Carolina. I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I'll tell you what, he has become a friend, and he's a good man. Lindsey Graham, Lindsey. That's pretty good, I think, Lindsey. That's pretty good.
And that was Donald Trump, you know, giving Lindsey, saying, oh, that wasn't that bad of an introduction, Lindsey. You know, he got a couple claps. He maybe heard some boos. You see the video. I mean, a lot of people aren't clapping. So, you know, it's kind of he was that moderate then because that's how they saw him. Right.
I mean, you know, I will say while folks are very excited now about him, there is still. And I don't think there's anything he could do to erase this. There is still always going to be a lot of skepticism about him. It is so, you know, baked in the cake among conservatives at this point that Senator Graham is shifty, is unpredictable, and, you know, he's just not truly one of them. Mm-hmm. And so all the folks that I did talk to, you know, last week, you know, sort of Tea Party folks, you know, real Trumpers.
Yeah,
Lee Bright
in second
there.
Place challenger.
Mean, you know, really,
I mean,
the fact that these people were praising Graham is amazing. But almost all of them would still say, but, caveat, he could go right back to what he was tomorrow. Mm. We are happy with him today. Today was a great day for him. We really hope he continues in this vein. We hope he's seen the light and that there is no working with the Democrats. Like, they are just the opposition party and you have to fight them at every turn. That's what they want to see.
Yeah.
And as long as he's doing that, they'll be happy. You know, I think that the minute he turns the other way and starts compromising again, I don't think it'll take long for them to drop him again.
So kind of wrapping up in the takeaway there is maybe he'll probably still have a primary challenger. It just won't be maybe as many primary challengers.
Maybe. You know, and we'll see how strong they are, too. You know, of course, we've talked before about John Warren, who ran against Governor McMaster in the primary this year and talked a lot on the campaign trail about Senator Graham, you know, bringing in the fact that Governor McMaster has long been a friend of Senator Graham's, and that, you know, got people talking about whether or not he was going to run next year. We'll see if that happens. But we know that Senator Graham has a political machine in South Carolina that kicks into gear every 6 years and that will leave no stone unturned in trying to get him reelected.
You know. And we will see that political machine definitely heating up going forward. But, geez, we have an election to watch in November, a month away.
We do.
So
let's
get one done first, folks. Jamie, thanks as always for stopping by and giving us your great insight on what's going on right now on Capitol Hill.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gavin.
Well, we are bouncing along the campaign trail with nearly a month to go till we reach that November 6th general election. Hoo-wee. Listen to that sweet whip crack come along down the trail. We got some munchy little campaign trail bites here for you. We can confirm that South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and The Post and Courier will host two gubernatorial debates this month ahead of the November 6th election. Those debates will be held on October 17th and October 25th. Between Republican Governor Henry McMaster and Democratic Representative James Smith. Those will be carried live over TV, radio, and streaming online at scetv.org. It's also worth noting that Hurricane Florence also put a little bit of a damper on some key fundraising time for McMaster and Smith, since they both suspended campaigning due to the hurricane. What with McMaster running the state during the crisis and with James Smith actually being involved and activated in the South Carolina National Guard, the two are now back on the campaign trail fundraising. But like we said, things are getting close as we approach that November 6th election, especially when you have to raise that much money to get those campaign ads on the air and in your mailbox and on signs alongside the road. Things add up. So be sure and get ready for that big push we'll be seeing in the final weeks. All right. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other, Did You Know? And Did You Know?, South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with some more state trivia. We should add geography and history when we add the description of this section, but I have yet to answer one right. I remain confident. And Russ, welcome back. And
thank you.
What do you got for us?
This is so easy. This will be the week.
Of course,
this
yes,
will, this
yes.
This will be the week.
It's always so easy.
Okay, two counties, Marion and Horry, have been in the news a lot lately, probably not for reasons they would like, the disastrous after effects from Hurricane Florence causing lots of problems in those two counties. But both of those counties, Marion and Horry, are named in honor of Revolutionary War figures in South Carolina, those two neighboring counties.
Yeah.
Marion, obviously named for General Francis Marion, the
Swamp Fox.
Swamp Fox, there you go. And Horry, named for Colonel, later General Peter Horry.
Oh, okay. Good. I thought you were going to make me guess his name. I was a little worried there.
Who was one of Marion's lieutenants. But, you know, there are a number of other counties in the state that are also named for Revolutionary War figures in South Carolina history. Generals, statesmen, that type of thing. So the question is, which of the following counties is not named for a Revolutionary War figure, in honor of a Revolutionary War figure?
I just want to preface this that I did tell Russ to come up with a Revolutionary General question, and he sure enough did, and mingled in geography with it as well. Yeah. All right, list them away, okay, Russ. Let's see what we got.
So here we go, smarty pants. So this means the others obviously are named after Revolutionary War figures, but the answer we're looking for is the county is not. Okay? A, Pickens County. B, Hampton County. C, Lawrence County. D, Sumter County. One of those four counties is not named for a Revolutionary War figure.
Talking it through. I'm already kind of leaning towards Lawrence. Let me just say that out loud. Sumter, Fort Sumter, Pickens, Hampton. I'm going to go with Lawrence.
Go with Lawrence. Okay. The correct answer is B, Hampton County. Hampton County named for... you picked the topic. Hampton County named for Confederate General, Governor, U.S. Senator Wade Hampton.
Okay. I did say Hampton. I'm like, oh, that would have been... No.
You did Pickens, named for General Andrew Pickens. Lawrence for statesman Henry Lawrence. And, of course, Sumter for General Thomas Sumter, the Gamecock.
Neat.
Well, full disclosure now, Wade Hampton's grandfather, General Wade Hampton I, was a Revolutionary War military leader in the state.
So that's how I got confused, Russ.
And he was there with, with Francis Marion and Thomas Sumter and the rest of the gang. But Hampton County is named in honor of... former Confederate General, Governor, Senator Wade Hampton.
I want to be on the record as saying I was confused because of the family lineage, and that's why I
duly noted.
All right, Russ, thank you for that wonderful tidbit of revolutionary history.
My pleasure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV every Friday at 7:30 p.m. or Sunday at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app. and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @scledepod. That's at @scledepod. You can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our sweet memes. We're also on Twitter, like I said, with the handle at @scledepod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scledepod@scetv.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media consultant. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on October 1st, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. Hasta la vista.